Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here for another episode here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio, where today is Tuesday, and today is when we talk about basically from the pulpit to the couch, as we provide a strong biblical teaching along with therapeutic techniques for the believers and non-believers to help individuals as they engage on this Christian journey. I want to first give honor to God for waking me up this morning with all the mess that I am dealing with. And I also want to thank the listeners for taking the time out of their day as they are joining in on these conversations. And I also want to thank my pastor, Pastor Dennis Dale, for also being a co-host on this show with me. So let me log him on because I sent him a text, and here he is. Good morning, Pastor Danisil. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. It's a beautiful Tuesday after a great Memorial Day holiday weekend, and the Lord is good. We bring you greetings from Higher Dominion Worship Center in the beautiful city of San Marcos, and the Lord is blessing us tremendously. For all of the listeners that are interested, we are located at 800 West Mission Avenue in San Marcos, and you can find more information on our church on hdwc.life. We're looking forward to discussing the topic today, and so I just hope we'll be a blessing to the listeners.
Good job. And you know what? And I'm getting a lot of positive feedback because many individuals are enjoying what the topics and stuff are. And, you know, that's strongly appreciated. And like I said, and if you want to meet Danisel in person, you can come and visit the church because there you will definitely enjoy it. Now, Pastor, today we're going to be talking about that balance with church and home. And a lot of times we find that it's either warp-sided. You know, I was talking about my house situation, then this morning I woke up and I noticed that my other car was in a disarray. And I had to text my daughter and showed her pictures where somebody broke into my car and went in my glove box, took the key to her car, put it on my seat. I'm like, you know what? I'm like, what more gonna happen? But I'm gonna be okay. I had the pictures, I closed it up, got in my other car and drove off and came to work.
Yeah.
You started to get, oh, I'm like, who breaks in somebody's car? What the hell are you looking for? You know, so then my daughter was like, Mom, change all your passwords because I'm getting a bunch of weird phone calls. So it is what it is. So I don't know, but I did have a gang of bills in the backseat of my car from 2016. So if they went through that, I wish them luck. But today we're going to talk about it. Some of that balance. Now, as a believer, many of us enjoy spending time in church, praising the Lord. However, what is one to do when one spouse or children starts to feel neglected, ignored, or resentful as it relates to the time that one spends at the church? You know, I remember a comedian, and people have said that they were drugged as kids, being drugged to church, how they was going 4, 5, 6 days a week. Now, let's face it, being a pastor, a minister leader, or being a super involved volunteer can be a challenge, not to mention being an over involved member. Now, between balancing life, work, home, while maintaining an intimate relationship with God, such can be tough. So, Pastor, today, let's talk to the listeners in regards to finding that balance, why it's important to have that balance, and how to protect oneself or one's family from burnout.
Yes, this is a very important topic. I'm glad that we are speaking on it today. And there's several ways to look at this. And so I talk to people all the time, either secular or Christians or religious people, in regards to a Christian life balance and a work life balance. And it's so important. The thing that I want people to understand in my introduction is that this doesn't come from the Lord. This comes from illusions from the enemy. This comes from us wanting to be people pleasers. This comes from people not understanding the gift of planning, and I call it a gift. This comes from... This comes from people not having control of their environment. And so we're going to go through and break down all of those things, and we're going to back them up by scripture. And the first one I wanted to talk about is that in my introduction here to bring it up is that the Lord will not put no more on us than we can bear. And when we look at that, that verse, we have to understand it. This is the first verse. I want to bring it up in my introduction. It's 1 Corinthians 10:13. And so Paul is talking about, you know, with every temptation, people go through things. We must trust in the Lord. The Lord would not tempt us above more than we can bear. But it's also dealing with time and dealing with balance. Because what happens is when we become off balance, off-keistered, off of being centered, that's when we open ourselves for pray for the enemy. And I want to tell the believers, when there's an overbalance leaning more towards your church and people in church more than it is towards home and it's off balance, I want to make a bold statement here from the beginning that that is temptation from the enemy, and it leads us to burnout. Because, see, again, 1 Corinthians, God doesn't put no more on us than we can bear. And so if we believe what he says in the book of Ephesians, that he knows us from the very foundation, that he has designed us, that he has equipped us to handle everything that he puts on our shoulders, well, surely time is one of those. And so investors, rich people, managers, political leaders, and even pastoral leaders call time your most valuable commodity, above wealth, above savings, above your gifts. Time is one is rated as one of the top and most valuable commodities. And so along with us learning about the Holy Spirit, learning about the Lord, of course, learning about the Trinity, learning about how to grow and mature as Christians, we have to understand that time and the ability to manage time is a big part of that. And God teaches us that from the very beginning. And so I wanted to open up with that, that number one, I do recognize that it is an issue in the church. Number two, that I have seen it over and over again happen to believers. And that number three, is that we must understand that this doesn't come from the Lord. Mm-hmm. It comes from us. It comes from the enemy. It comes from distraction, from Satan. And so I want to start us out with the right mindset, first of all, because it's the enemy's job to throw distraction. And I'm going to use one of the young people's terms, to throw shade on the church. And if he can do that and – you know, let us see that the church is an issue, because we do have that coming from certain circles in our present-day time where people are blaming a lot of issues on the church, and that's just not so. It's a trick of the enemy, and I wanted to open up with that statement, and we're open for questions now.
Okay. Now, you know what, Pastor, I want to thank you for sharing that, because a lot of times, even in our work life, in our home life, many individuals struggle with that balance. And then when you take church and you add church to the equation, it makes it even more challenging, because a lot of times individuals are going to church for different reasons. And some people think, if I spend more time in church, maybe I'll get more blessed. Or we take things and we kind of mismanage things. Like you said, the money. But we mismanage our time, because time management is a skill. And it's very one of those things to where you think you're doing the right thing and you're for the right reason, but then you find out that when you invested more over here, you're lacking more over there. And it can, you know, affect other people. Now, a lot of times, especially with children, I remember when my kids were young, my kids was getting tired of me taking them to church all the time. And I used to say I wasn't going to do that, because my mother used to do it. She would take us to church in the morning, at night, in the afternoon. I got so tired of going from church to church to church to church, it was ridiculous. But by that same token, I learned why she was doing it. And sometimes, like I said, she was running to the church, but we didn't have that balance. And when you don't have balance, it brings up other emotions like stress. You're tired. You know, you got so much going on, not even just being a member, but also individuals that are in leadership. They have to find that balance too. Let's speak on that a little bit. What can we do in regards to not only, let's start with the membership, I mean with the leadership. Because you were the one, when you told me one time you was going on a sabbatical, I was like, okay, what's that? So what's leadership supposed to do?
Yeah, well, let me speak on leadership first of all, because church leadership can be pulled in different directions as far as obligations. And the first obligation is always home for a pastor. It's their home, and then we have a home schedule. And the reason why we try to have a schedule that's impactful, I'm going to use that word, impactful, is so that we can have an equipped body. And we have to have classes that identify to our demographic. And so if we are a church that's heavy in youth, we have to have classes for them. We have to have leaders that are trained to handle them. If we are a church that's built for outreach, we have to have classes for that and people trained for that. And so if we are a church that deals with seniors, we have to have ministries for that. And so the church has to be equipped for its congregation. And in the high day of Higher Dominion Worshipship, we had a business class and teaching on credit, home ownership, business ownership, getting higher degrees. And it takes specialized people to teach those classes. And so, but that was only once every 2 weeks. We had the youth classes for the youth on in Sunday school classes, and then we had youth service once a week. We had a Bible study equipped for just women, a prayer and Bible band. And then we had a general Bible study for the whole congregation. Then we had leadership training class advanced for the leaders. And then we had the elders and ministers class for the lay leaders, pastors and ministers, okay? And so, and there's other classes. And so when I give that litany of classes, well, it seems like, oh, my goodness. But no one is required to attend all of those. And those classes per member may only be one or two a week. And so if you attend one class a week and then you have your Sunday morning service that you're going to attend, well, you're doing your reasonable service as far as that membership goes forth, okay? And then we have outreach ministries. We have a bereavement and convalescent ministries, and a good pastor, a good leader will have people who will rotate in those ministries so that they don't overwork individuals. And we have people who are trained to handle those types of things. And so when I was coming up in the church, we were trained the right way. And when you're going to deal with the sick, our leaders taught us, you go there and do what you're supposed to do. And your visit should be no more than 5 to 10 minutes. You go there and let them know that we care and that we love them. We drop off a gift to show support, and we pray for them, and we let them do what they're supposed to do. That is to rest. And so all of these classes are the same way. I'm going to stick to my opening statement and saying that God never puts no more on us than bear. And at the same time, I'm still recognizing that there is a problem, but we have to identify that the problem is with man and with the enemy, okay? Because it's his job to make the church dysfunctional. And your opening statement, your statement that you said was so very, very powerful, is that people are trying to add to themselves and make themselves look more great and bigger, that, well, I attended all the services and I brought my kids out and I did all this, but how much of it was edifying? How much of it was, led to, you know, you and your kids going higher in the Lord and being fed? And so we have to understand that. I'm going to bring in one more point before we go to the next question, is that you can't allow people to put pressure on you too. Now, my three older kids, they came up when I was in church 3-4 times a week. But what we did was we went to church and we came home. And so a lot of people will tell you, Pastor Estelle didn't do a lot of, you know, church after church is what I call it. If I'm in church for a whole hour, then I don't go and sit at Denny's for another hour and a half and call it that church time. That's socializing. And so, but my point was that people say, well, the pastor, he's gone home. That's where he should be. And some nights, the pastor's kids aren't here. And I said, well, they don't have to be here. They're at home. They're studying. They're doing their homework. They're here when they need to be here. And so I never allow them to put pressure on my children that way and on my family that way. When we had to be there, when the Lord required us, obligated us to be there, and for us to give service, we were there. And so those are all the things to keep in mind. Now, the other part of that equation is that, because we're talking about leaders now, is that leaders are often pulled by their denomination. So on top of that, in the local church, you know, especially in Pentecostal and charismatic churches, you're pulled out now by the district, and then you're pulled out now by the jurisdiction. And so, again, this isn't on the Lord. This is on individuals accepting positions. And as we talked about last week, we tend to use the most gifted members more, and we talk about Praetorian's Law, where 20% of the people do 80% of the work. And so now we have somebody who's the local youth pastor in his local church, and now he's the youth pastor in the district over 8 churches, and now he's the youth president for the jurisdiction over 52 churches. And so we have to learn the power for the people who are dealing with this type of experience, the power to say no, okay?
Correct.
And so God knows how, you know, how effective we are, but we can't spread ourselves too thin. Now, the exception for that, Jeanette, is when the church is what I call a self-supporting church, which most of our churches are not. If you're being paid a salary as a youth pastor, for instance, let's say they're paying you $60,000 a year, and this is your full-time job, and you have the blessing to be in a part of a ministry that can afford to pay you a salary, then that's completely different now because you're not answering to a job. Also, that's the only exception to that. And so, again, the answer points back to us putting too much on ourselves again.
Correct. And you know what, Pastor, what you're saying is a lot, especially being a people pleaser. A lot of individuals don't know how to say no. A lot of times individuals they struggle with also setting boundaries, because boundaries will also help with that balance. And I also want to say, as you're talking about time, but also we have to learn how to delegate. Part of that balance is delegation. Who can you trust, and are they able and capable to do the assignment that you're delegating to them? Because part of that will put us off balance is taking on a lot of the work. And not only in the church, but also in our home. The same things we do at church, we also have to do in home, which gives us a whole different type of ministry, of knowing the difference between church ministry and home ministry. Because it also should be carried over into the home. Now, we're going into these things in regards to trying to avoid the burnout, because people get angry. And I have some information, and this information talks about the 5 common reasons church members burn out. And not only just the church members, but also everybody in the church, whether it's in leadership, whether it's the members. But these are some of the things that happens is, like you said, 1, the church doesn't have a clear purpose or vision, because many times the business of church life is not the problem. It's the lack of clarity of the vision of the church. So you want to make sure that everybody is clear in regards to why they're doing what they're doing, and then that helps. Another thing, the church has certain activities because they've always done it that way before. People get caught up in these old rituals where we're going to do this in the morning. And not only with those rituals, Pastor, I've seen individuals, they go to church from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. They're there all day. I remember when I was going to church, I was like, Lord, I would never get with you, well, not you, but someone that told me I had to go to the school of ministry. And I had to be, no, I was helping Joanne do something in the church. And she told me I had to be there 8 in the morning. I said, Lord, I'm going to starve to death. I can't be here all day. I'm going to need a snack. I'm going to have to do something. And I used to leave church and speak and go to IHOP when we were over at Vista. Because the first thing came to my mind is, if I got to be here from 8 o'clock to 2 o'clock, how am I going to do this? So we got to find that balance, too. Another thing is too few members doing most of the ministry. A lot of times that those individuals are. And in regards to also, the church has no clear expectation of membership. Most of our churches, we expect little or nothing from our members, and that is exactly what we get. So it's very imperative. Sometimes we got to call people to the side and say, hey, we need some help over here. What does your schedule look like? Are you available? And sometimes that helps, too, if we communicate with one another. So the communication is also very important as we're trying to find that balance.
I agree. We have to understand this, that that God has given us, you know, the help that we need for the level that the church is at. And then as he brings more people in, as leaders, we have to learn to delegate. Now, some of the dangers are there, and I want to speak to some of those just to shift gears for a little bit. Believers have to realize that there are wolves in the pulpit. There are charlatans. There are individuals out there who are looking to make themselves more than doing ministry for the Lord. And so when we talk about saying no, it's okay to say no to a pastor or a leader when things don't sound biblically, or when they are coming against the home, the family, when they just don't add up. And so as leaders, we have to understand that as a pastor, we don't own people. And so a lot of people in pastoral leadership have, you know, to really not deal with, you know, abuse. And what I'm saying about that is that we have spoken past shows of other types of abuse, but this is what I'm talking about, abuse and overusing people or putting guilt upon people. When someone can't make it or don't make it or doesn't, and then we use that pastoral guilt on them. And leaders are guilty of that. Pastors are guilty of that, whether they're male or female. And so we have to understand that we shouldn't put no more on people than they can bear. If the Lord doesn't do it, what gives us the right to do it? And we have to understand that is that if we take care of our membership and use their resources, and time being one of the most valuable one of those resources, is that it's a bigger blessing to the ministry. Because we don't burn people out. We don't have people with the impression that this church is just too much. They're putting too much on me. Now, the other side of that is that if you look at your church schedule and be honest with yourself and saying that I'm giving 2 hours to my church fellowship, 3 hours, 4 hours a week to my church, you know, you're not getting a lot put on you. And so we do have the flip side of that where people say that, you know, I'm doing this for church and ministry and this and that, and they have another agenda. We have people who I had leaders in my church before who within the ministry call themselves so-called having other ministries. And then they were trying to do other things on the outside, And so all those things are biblically incorrect. And so, you know, God doesn't allow you to use another minister's platform to try to make yourself. God would allow you space for yourself when you are faithful to the ministry you're in. I often remind people a lot, I was part of my church that I grew up in. The Lord blessed me to be there from the age of 10 years old. I was a member there till I was 37. And as the Lord blessed me to matriculate through different positions within the church and always try to help and volunteer on different levels. And then when my family came along and when my children came along, we volunteered together. And so by doing that and being faithful, the Lord will bless you. But not at any time can I say that the Lord put more on me than I can bear. He never did. There were times when, by my own personal confession, that I overextended things because, let me say this in a positive light, believers do have fun at church. And I can't express that enough. And we do have fun. And I was one of those. And since we're talking about it, you know, there is a case called church addiction. Where people, I have counseled people, you know, I had some members and family members. I had to sit down and talk to them because either the husband or the wife, they come to Sunday school at our church. And after Sunday school, we had a little break. Then they'd be at, you know, they might have come to 8 o'clock service. Then they come back for the 11 o'clock service. And then they would leave and then go over to another ministry and catch part of that service. And then if we were having night service, they'd go over here to that service, catch part of that service. And then they come home and they'd just be no good to the family. And there have been cases where couples have divorced over church. We have a lot of case study on that. I studied that in Bible college, and then I've seen it firsthand in the church I grew up in, and then I've seen it firsthand in my own ministry. And so the church addiction thing is real, but can I be clear to say that again, it wasn't of the Lord. These are people. Your church can be addicting, the music, the entertainment, the people, but these are all things of entertainment value. These are all things of people getting more hooked on the social side than the spiritual side of ministry. These are all things where people are, oh, well, my girlfriend's here, I'm going to go over here, or my friends are over here, oh, we got to hit this concert, we got to hit that concert, and we're going to this dinner, this luncheon, and I want to support this person and support that person because they supported me, and now I have to support them. And the Lord just does not require us to do all those things. But, you know, it's happened to me. I've seen it happen to a lot of other people. To be clear, we have to understand, again, that that's not a part of God's divine plan. That's when we become more fleshly about church and ministry than spiritual. And so we do get touched spiritually by this also. And we have to understand, though, just as you said at the very beginning, there's a consequence to that. And the enemy is just sitting there waiting for us to hit that wall. And so we have to be careful of that.
And that is true, Pastor, because I know in my last marriage, my husband used to get so mad at me. He used to want to bribe me. Can you not go to church today? Can you just stay home one day? Can you? Because I was working so much, and then I'm going to church. But I had got caught up in that routine because I did enjoy going to church. I mean, I'm not one that want to be there from 8 in the morning to 8 o'clock at night because I'll be like, I can't do all this. But by that same token, there's also, even in therapy, there's what you call spiritual abuse. Because sometimes individuals will deny the person the right to practice their religious beliefs and their preferences, because sometimes individuals, what happens is if you have one that's saved and the other one isn't, that's you're not equally yoked. And in addition to that, the balance is going to be off because that person is going to want you to be at home more versus being in church, because that's another conflict. Because sometimes individuals can be so into the church they missing what their family is lacking in the home. Now, let's talk about that a little bit, because we're also going to have to go into identifying when an individual needs a break, because sometimes they don't even know. And like you said, that's not God. And a lot of times they are trying to either run away from something, not wanting to deal with certain situations. But then I'm seeing, I was even watching the other night, there was a movie, and the movie, this kid was killed. And the father was into the church, the mother was into the church, and what the kid was lacking was his father spending time with him, was his father talking to him, because he was always at church. And sometimes individuals may not understand that, but that's a part of where we're looking at this balancing this too. Got to take care of both, because ministries do start at home.
Yes. Well, let me say to that again, I'm just going to compliment you, Jeanette. You're on fire today with the questions. These questions are all going deep. These questions are all germane. What I mean by that is that they are, you know, the foundation. They are the root. And we have to understand this. First of all, let me deal with that unequally yoked question. Paul talks to us in 1 Corinthians 7 and 14 for the unbelieving husband or the unbelieving wife is that if we would handle things like Jesus handles the church, that the unbelieving spouse will become saved if we handle things the right way, meaning that some of the things we talked about earlier in church, and that is that we don't abuse that time. We understand that God puts an onus on family. He puts an onus on marriage. It is a very powerful institution to him. And those, neither one of those are to be neglected because of church. Well, my pastor needs me. Well, they need me. Well, this is my organization. Well, this is my group. No, the first thing is that spouse, that unbelieving spouse, because I'm just going to say it, someone may get mad, but how can we be a witness and try to bring other people into the church if we can't bring in our own spouse?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one thing now to marry and be unequally yoked. And so the Lord gives us grace, and the Lord will forgive us for that, because a Christian is to marry a believer. And so the Lord doesn't say you're done because you marry an unbeliever. The Lord says now just live a true Christian life in front of them, and you will draw them just like I draw people to me. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now to go deeper in that, because you know, as a pastor, I'm trying to stay away from the prophetic right now and chase too many rabbits and stay focused on the question because it's a whole another show about being unequally yoked, and I'm trying not to go into that right now. It's so tempting, and so I'm gonna stay on the surface.
We're gonna talk about that next week. So you just gave us a topic.
All right, good.
Because that's part of the
balance.
Because if you're not equally yoked, and a person will say, "Well, I'll go to church with you," where he would go to church, well, he'll be sitting there mad dogging the pastor, falling asleep, kicking him. We're about to fight in the church. I'm like, he's like, "Well, we got to be here all day." So it was that balance. He was like, "Okay, well, if I give you a little bit by going, can we do this when we get home?" So it was that finding that balance, because that happens not only with your spouse, but also with your kids. They do the same thing.
It happens very much. And so that's where the saying comes in, is that a believer becomes so heavenly minded that there are no earthly good. And that's a church saying, and it's pastors use it a lot in counseling to remind, you know, the wife or the husband that one of your first obligations is to that home. And so we have had many cases where people say, "Oh, the pastor's kids are the worst," you know. We've heard this, and they say, "Oh man, the pastor's daughter, she done got pregnant. Or the pastor's son done got somebody pregnant," and that's because the pastor is so stretched out. You know, he's trying to do everything himself. He's unhinged. He's unbalanced. That he's not giving the attention to home as he should. Then it happens to the deacon's family, the assistant pastor's family, and because we are letting so many people stress us out because we're looking at the membership, we're looking at the numbers, and it's really a challenge to our faith if we want to be honest about it. God is faithful. Mm-hmm. He is just. God will put no more on us than we can bear. And so that's what the Lord is saying. Now, in Romans 12:1, the Lord talks about us, you know, that I will, you know, accept from you, brethren. I want you, brethren, you know, by my mercy to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. I mentioned earlier that I was going to talk about that later in the show, and then we're going to talk about it. God is not requiring from us, you know, our opus maximum. He's not asking for us to come in and just do everything. We should not have the mentality that the program is not going to go over unless we're there. Church is not going to function. This program, this, you know, the choir is not going to do right. The praise team is not going to be effective if I'm not a part of it. Now, there's a caveat to that. Our reasonable service is that when something is in its inception, when something is just starting out, of course we give a little bit more attention to it then. And so we sit down and we plan. We're just starting this. We are just starting back again. This is a new program that we're launching. Or even outside of church, if you're launching a new business, we have to understand that the first 2 years are critical. And so it's not just saying, do I have the finances? Do I have this and that? We have to sit down, bring our individuals together and say, hey, we're getting ready to start ministry again. We're getting ready to start a business. We're getting ready to start this. And so until we see the growth that we want, you know, that the Lord has promised us, until we can get a profit, until we come out of the red into the black, there's going to be a little more time, you know, sown into this as a seed, and we want to reap reward from it. But that doesn't become the pattern. That doesn't become the pattern. It's the norm only for a small length of time and not to be abused. And so God is saying, you know, I just want your reasonable service. I gave this one the gift of healing. I gave this one the gift of preaching. I gave this one the gift of singing. When we all come together and share our gifts, it's enough for everybody, and not one person is overloaded. And so that's the way the Lord sets it up. And so we have to keep those things in mind. And then I want to shift to another point of view, is that just because there are issues that we don't want to face, this is a bomb, don't blame it on the church.
Correct.
Because you don't want to go home. Because you don't want to go home, don't blame it on the church. Because you got them bad kids at home, don't blame it on the church. Because you're trying to be in denial of so many things, you know, we have been to a lot of people, they're coming to church, but they're not being effective at church because they're using it as an escape rather than.
Correct, and they're hiding. That's another topic. Hiding in the church.
Yes.
We can do it too on that one too, because people will hide.
And so now we're blaming these things on the church. And for lack of a better word right now for the listener, I'm going to apologize up front. But as a pastor, I have been ambushed. And I have had husbands come to me. I had wives come to me. And they said, Pastor, we need a meeting. And I said, can I know what the topic is about? So I prepared. They said, no, we just need to meet, sir. We just want to talk to you. We come together and meet. And I have these husbands looking me in the eyes and said, why is my family spending so much time at the church and this? And I have these wives looking at me and, why are you using my husband so much and this and that and that? And I have to look at them out there and saying, I'm not. And I said, y'all set me up. I'm going to tell you the truth. And I said that here, you want to see our schedule? You want to see our list? And they're like, oh, Pastor, I thought you had my back and this and that. I said, no, you cannot put the pastor under the bus. You can't put the church under the bus, because there's other issues. Or use the church as an excuse because you've gone somewhere else or went somewhere else. If you want to go fishing after church, just tell your wife you're going fishing. Take her with you. If you want to go skating, take your wife with you. Take your spouse with you. Go skating. Do those things. But don't say, you know, the church went over an hour long, the church went over here too long, and all these things. And so I have been ambushed a number of times, and we sit there and talk, and as I'm talking on this phone, I can tell you, for a number of times, the spouses will say, wow, okay, that's your schedule, this is what time you get out, this mm-hmm. and that. I say, yeah, it's all online. Check the website. Yeah. They go on the website, they see it, they see that, and we say, okay. And next thing you know, they start coming to church. And so,
and you know what, it's funny
yes.
you said that, because I'm sitting up here laughing, thinking about me as a therapist. I get cussed out. I get ridiculed. People, I have to turn my phone off because my phone be blowing off the hook. Parents, people be like, well, why did my husband not come to your DV class? And why did they? Because they think it's a punishment, but they have so much fun to where they find it as a place of refuge to where they can learn something, and people don't understand why they like coming. Clients are like, I look forward to coming to see you. It's crazy. But then you got to balance that out, because what happens is you start focusing more over here, you start neglecting over there, and it makes people wonder. It makes them want to know, well, what are they doing over there? And like you said, sometimes it can lure the other person in. It's like one of that song that the songwriter wrote, I Got What I Needed. And a lot of
yeah.
times they don't realize that, but you do have to maintain and find that balance. And one of the things, Pastor, we also have to recognize when we see another person, and we have to recognize when they're out of balance, when we see
right.
that they're hiding, when we're noticing they don't want to go home because they're sitting in the parking lot of the church, or, you know, you run into them places and they always volunteer. And it's like, okay, well, I understand you got a family. So how are your
mm-hmm.
children doing? How is your spouse doing? Sometimes we have to just do a check-in period with individuals from time to time, because if they don't recognize it, we have to recognize it and try to
yeah.
guide them also in the right way.
Yes. Very, very important. I think we've touched on a lot of great things on today. And, you know, church addiction, church addicts, people hiding in the church instead of facing issues in their home. And
mm-hmm.
I want to bring to the believers, you know, Romans chapter 8, you know, verse 28, that all things work together for the good. And so that's what we've talked about, that even in this situation, God has a way of working it for the good. I want to talk to the believers about, I always like to give Old Testament and New Testament examples. There's Old Testament examples for the believers listening about Moses, when God, you know, he saw God face to face and the Lord talked to him. He saw the burning bush. The Lord told him, remove his sandals. He's on holy ground. All of these things. And then the Lord prepared him, you know, got him a great education in Egypt. Then the Lord sent him out in the wilderness, in the desert, to humble him. And then it was time for him to go back to Egypt and free the people. So he goes and he frees the people. And he's doing all of this. And the people are saying, Moses, 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 Moses. And Moses is saying, yes, 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 yes. And he has over 2 million men, plus women, plus Egyptians that have followed him out, plus all their livestock, all their livelihood, all of their resources, and he's over all of this. And he goes to out as soon as he leaves Egypt, he goes to his father-in-law, Jethro, and his father-in-law takes a quick assessment and says, I'm paraphrasing, he says, man, what are you doing? And he says, you're trying to do all this by yourself. Just
mm-hmm.
as you touched upon earlier, you're going to destroy yourself. And so Moses prayed about it, and the Lord told him, get you 70 elders, men that you can trust, men that are gifted, men that are trainable, men that you know will be responsible. And then he said, lay hands on them. And so we
mm-hmm.
see one of the first references in the Old Testament of laying hands. And the Lord says, I'm going to give them a portion of your gift. I'm paraphrasing again. And so
mm-hmm.
the Lord recognizes his leader being burnt out. But what's important about it is that the man that's not a part of the church, that's unsaved, that isn't a part of the covenant, Jethro, but he's his father-in-law, he sees it. And so just as you said, it can be identified upon people and upon leaders and believers. And we see the signs. People, they're stuttering with their speech. They're impulsive. They are stressed out. We can start seeing it in their skin. We can start seeing it in their eyes. We can start even seeing it in their mind. They're forgetful. And so when you start, I can't find my keys. When you get to, you know, did I lock the door? When you get to those types of things, that's when you know you need to sit down. And we're about 15 minutes left in the show, and it's leading me into tools now. And I have written down the tools to help us. And the first thing is that I'm going to talk about technology. We have these smartphones, Jeanette.
Yeah.
And they got calendars on them, and we don't use them. We have alarms built in. We have aids and assistants, and we have all of these wonderful things that the Lord has given us in this modern-day time that are not just there to pop up, but they also can sound off. They also can give us alerts to help keep us on top. The military calls it, you know, you can either say it's the 5 P's, of preparation or preparedness or to be on time, or it's the 7 P's. I added 2 more to my list, and these things just help us all the time. I have my list. I have to be honest, I don't use it all the time, but it is my list of things that I need to accomplish for the day. If I didn't scratch off everything, I have them for the next day, and I've learned that I don't have to complete everything. I just have to follow up and communicate, as we said earlier. Yes, go ahead.
I want to say this. When you said that, I thought about sometimes Siri can be rude. Sometimes when Siri used to be on my phone, Siri used to get on my nerves. And then I noticed that with these phones, like sometimes I'll leave my office and my car will tell me, you're going to be home in an hour and a half. I'll be like, how you know I'm going home? What if I don't want to go home? But these phones and this technology is really scary, because it has programmed where you go on a daily basis. And my phone will let me know, I got to go here, you normally here. So those things will pop up. So that is so true. But I had to put it out there. Siri can be kind of rude sometimes. But we do have to use our technology in regards to balancing our day and sticking to a calendar and a schedule. Okay? What are some of the other tools we can use besides using our technology?
Prayer. Prayer is the most powerful tool we can have and use effectively. It builds that relationship with God, and this leads to discernment. And as I've corrected people many times, discernment isn't just a suspicion. It's not used for you to get in other people's business. Discernment is for your business, and God will give you discernment over decisions, over purpose. He'll give you discernment over your balance and your time. And the more time we spend in prayer, the more time our spirit comes in communion with God. And the stronger that relationship is, the more balanced we become. That's an equation. And that equation works. So it starts with prayer. That leads to the stronger spiritual connection and communication with God, which builds our discernment, which keeps us balanced. And I have several examples of that where the Lord says, this is not necessary, that's not necessary, this is not necessary. And what I've done is break some addictive habits. And so some of those things are like, you know, spending too much time in front of the TV, even reading too long and too much. And they're addictions, but they are what we call time eaters. And I have to emphasize that enough, time eaters. The other thing is that if you always get a late start, you always going to be late. And if you're late, it always makes it seem like what you're going to is running over time. And we get a distortion from that. We get a distortion, and we get a false reading, is what I call it, by not being balanced. And that false reading throws us off. and we say, this is killing my time, this is taking too much of my time, this is taking too much of my time. And really, again, it's because we're not balanced. And so we have to say that I have to go to bed on time in order to get up on time. You have to know your biological clock. I have to, if it calls for it, yeah, get your clothes ready at night. If it calls for it, put your briefcase and your bag by the door. If it calls for it, and put a hanger by the door or in the kitchen and hang them car keys up there. We can take steps like that. And if you save 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 5 minutes there, it's going to add up to an hour. And if we have that time to unload, to breathe, and not feel so stressed, you know, we really feel so much better about ourselves. And now we can plug in some other things that really help, like spending some time walking, spending some time in the gym, spending some time in the spa, spending some time just sitting and talking to our children and to our family. And we're talking about all these tools and we've gotten away from them. And so I have some of my most balanced week when we plan to have dinner at the dinner table instead of everybody eating on their own. And it's the modern thing to do, you know. And some of us on the go so much, we're eating dinner on the way home. Too much takeout is bad for the body, it's bad for the mind, and all of these things. And so when we plan things out and when we look at things the right way and use our tools and our resources, we can really enjoy life. And that's what the Lord says. It's coming to one of my last scriptures where the Lord says, I come that you may have life and that you may have it more abundantly. And so, you know, we got to understand that is that God didn't put this life on us for it to be a rat race. God wants us to enjoy life, and he wants us to have it more abundantly. And that doesn't mean that every single second has to be filled. It means that we have to be in communication with the Lord to understand what he has in store for us to experience this abundant life. And so yesterday I had one of the most funnest days with my family, and we planned out some things, and we woke up in the morning, and everybody was like, oh, we're tired. Let's just skip it and not do nothing. And the Lord used my little son, and he says, nope. He says, Dad, we planned it. And he must have said to me, when are we going? When are we going? When are we leaving? When are we leaving? Over 40, 50 times. And every single time I try to say, well, we can just relax. He says, no. He says, we've been talking about it. We planned it. We did this. We had so many things. We bought this. We prepared it. We packed some stuff. We did this. And I was like, you know what, Lord? He is so right. And so once we did it, we looked at the time. Everything was on time. We went out, enjoyed our day. Everybody had a good time, was balanced. We got back home in plenty of time where we still had time to do the things we had to do to prepare for today. And all I could say was God is good. And we had abundant life, wasn't overwhelmed with things. And that's how good the Lord is. And so I want the believers to understand that this doesn't come from God. It's a distraction from the enemy to make all the things that God has for us that are good, he wants to make them look bad. And so time is good. Serving your church is good. Being faithful to your church is good. But being faithful to your church can be as little as 2 to 3 hours a week. It doesn't mean 18 or 24 or 50 hours. And so the believers have to understand that. And we gave some powerful scriptures to back that up today.
And you know what, Pastor, I want to add another one because you were talking about prayer, but also asking God for help, because this should be able to be done without being said, but we need to be reminded, because the Bible also says in James 1:5 to ask God for wisdom and he will give it to you, because a lot of times we don't know what to do, but we have to ask the Lord to show us how to better balance our family life and our ministry life. Sometimes we can go to some spiritual leaders for some advice to see how, you know, they can help. And then we have to evaluate also our effectiveness in a way that works for ourselves. not because people say, well, we know you got a little time, we know, but because usually when we're looking at other people's schedule, other people's time, we don't know what they may have going on. So while we don't know the specific situations or what burdens other people are carrying, we need to know this. God never intended for us as Christians and our Christian walk to be an unending, like you said, a rat race, and you would never, because it's hard to keep up with things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you indicated God never intended also for our family to take a back seat to our ministry.
No.
God never intended for our ministry to keep us away from personal time with Him. And God never intended for us to always feel stressed or carry the burdens alone. We do have to take it to prayer. But there's some other things that we can also do is, and you also tapped into that, is eliminate what's unnecessary. Because sometimes we be doing way too much. We have to, and that's why time management is so important. So we basically have to, when we're talking about what are you currently doing that could be done by someone else? What are you doing that you can stop doing? And it wouldn't really negatively affect anyone or anything in your organization. So those are some of the things. We have to go back to the drawing board. My cold therapist, Lisa, gets on me all the time about that. She'll be like, you stop when you get ready. She'll tell me, well, Jeanette, we have to learn how to work smarter and not harder because so many different things be drawn and drawn and I'm pulled here and pulled there, but we do have to find that balance. Most importantly, we have to know when to take a day off because if you're on a church staff and you feel like you have too much to do and that it's not possible to take a day off, there's a few suggestions. You can meet with your pastor and ask your pastor for help or someone in leadership and try to talk to them in regards to help you understand how to best minimize your workload, find creative ways to delegate tasks to anyone, to someone else, and learn to identify and eliminate things that are in the grand scheme of things that are, like I said, time wasters and unnecessary. Another thing in regards to this balance is when you join your family, because when you join your family, that makes them, you know, feel like they're added to. They don't feel neglected. But also hear them out. Don't let it always be your way. We have to learn how to compromise. A lot of times that's one of the things that I see that's lacking in leadership is when a person is the pastor, yes, you're the pastor in the church, but when you go home, you're husband. You're not pastor right now. You're the husband. You're the daddy. You're the uncle. You're the brother.
Yes.
So if you are always in pastor mode, sometimes that can be overwhelming too. And protect your evenings. Evenings need to be primarily for the family time, at least 2 to 4 open nights a week. Follow a plan by being intentional with things, activities, and devotions. So when you start spending that time with the family, then the family won't miss you. Then the family won't feel like they're being put on the back seat because it could end a lot of conflicts. It could stop a lot of individuals from having to come to marriage family counseling in regards to bringing all their issues to the pastor, to other individuals, because some of these things can't be taken and handled at home if you learn how to balance. Pastor, we have 90 seconds left. Anything you want to leave the listeners with?
Well, I just want to touch on the point that you just said. I think the word that will hit at home is two words, actually, is quality time. And so if we, you know, I think about how much time I put into presentations, so that I am before people in a professional manner, and I'm articulate, and I know what I'm saying, and I sound professional. And so we put that time in our profession. We put that time in public speaking, and we have to put that type of preparation in our family. And just speaking on again, the fun we had yesterday, it was so good because it was a lot of planning put into it. And, you know, planning, packing, and thinking about it 2 to 3 days prior. And then when that time was family time, the work phone was turned off and work things were set aside. And this was family time. And this was time to joke, to laugh, to share. And in my family, when you have, you know, boys, girls, different individuals, I try to pinpoint in on each child, you know, and of course my wife, and give them and make them all feel like there's individual time along with group family time. And by being smart and using that and making that time all quality, you know, the kids remember it. If my mm-hmm. 4-year-old remembers that, and when we come back home, you know, last night his statement was, "This was the best day ever," and you know, my heart is all filled up and everything. We just bugging, having a good time, and then nobody tell him to say that. But you have to right. understand that this is life abundant, and so mm-hmm. balance is good. Okay.
Correct.
God bless
now,
you.
Now, we ran out of time, but I want to say in closing, that's teaching those memorable moments. And don't
yes.
let the memorable moments be something that's traumatizing or something that they don't like and lead to anger. So join us next week as we're going to be talking about unequally yoked, because June is coming. A lot of people are going to be getting married in June. We don't want to be messing up nobody's wedding. But by that same token, premarital counseling is very important. Trust me on that one. So until next week, I look forward to having you guys join in at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. And remember, until then, you got this. Thank you, Pastor.
God bless you.
Get ready for these
God
comments.
Bless you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Ooh, this thing right here.